This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, you know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the St. Jude kids. St. Jude's doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations like the ones that you give, families never receive a bill ever from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, food, none of that. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope. Get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It's going to look great on you. So join all the doctors, researchers, and me in this fight. All right, text the word Bobby. It's only 6 numbers to 785-833. Again, text the word Bobby to just these 6 numbers, 785-833. Going to have on Michael Hobby in just 1 second, the lead singer of the band A Thousand Horses. They kind of shot quickly to success with a song here called Smoke. She's That's a number one for them. We'll get to that. And also, they have a new song out called Drinking Song, which is right here. But everybody loves a drinking song to get you going when the week's been long. So that's in a second. His wife, Caroline Hobby, has a really great podcast called Get Real with Caroline Hobby. You know, she has a whole thing, too, where she talks to the wives of country stars. She does definitely more than that. That podcast has really turned into a great podcast. I know him through her again, and I know her and him through Amy too. Like, I've known Caroline, but I've become, I think, more friendly with especially both of them on a different level because of Amy. Because I go over to Amy's house, and I guess they live right by each other. So I just kind of be hanging out. So when they put out new music, and I kind of tell them in a minute that Rod, you know, my guy in radio was like, have you heard their new song? And I was like, I haven't. I heard it. I was like, dang, we should get him in. I think I just texted you one night, and I was like, yeah. Hey, let's get Michael Hobby in.
All right.
So, yeah, he's coming in a second. But check out Get Real with Caroline Hobby. Mike has a podcast called Movie Mike's Movie Podcast, which I saw you went and saw that movie Parasite.
Yes.
Which is a movie without English.
It's North Korea, South Korea.
Okay. Would I like it?
I think you would. It's not scary. It's kind of like Black Mirror-ish.
But, I don't care about that. It's the subtitles.
But you don't, after 5 minutes, it doesn't even, like, factor into it. I thought it was going to be an issue too. That's why I waited so long to see it. But after about 5 minutes, I was like, I'm totally into this movie.
Will it win Best Picture? Is that up for Best Picture?
Yeah. I think it's close.
One of my friends went and saw 1917,
mm-hmm.
the war movie, loved it.
Yeah.
And I guess it only goes black a couple times, like fades to black. Otherwise, it looks like one continuous shot.
Pretty much, yeah. They'll do like little camera motions where it goes like to the side. It'll go black for like a quick second, mm-hmm. and then it goes back into it.
It's about a kid who has to get, let me see if I'm right on this because you've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a kid who has to get many miles away during the war to tell them that they're all about to be killed.
Yeah, to call off an attack. So it's him and another guy and go travel to tell this other troop, like, hey, call off this attack. So.
And they send him because the brother's in the troop.
Yep.
And they know he'll do everything possible to get to them. Man, that sounds good.
It is really good. I'm still holding on that Once Upon a Time will win, but after seeing 1917, I'm like, that's like probably the critic favorite.
Movie Mike's Movie Podcast, where on this week's episode, which by the way, who knows when you'll hear this, but you're talking about massive A-list stars that never won an Oscar.
Yeah.
Who is one that comes to mind?
Brad Pitt.
Never won an Oscar.
He's won as a producer, but never as an actor.
So is he up for any this year?
He's up for Best Supporting for Once Upon a Time.
Which he probably could win.
Yeah, so he'll probably finally get one this year.
Huh. All right, check that. Movie Mike's Movie Podcast. Amy has the Four Things podcast where she talks about four things: faith, family, love, watermelons. I don't know what she's talking about, but it's all different stuff. Check that out. The Sore Losers is a sports podcast. There's obviously this one.
We always say that another one's coming. I don't know. Is it coming? Are we close to the other one?
Yeah.
How close?
Pretty close.
All right. I give up. I'm never saying we have another one again. All right. So appreciate you guys. I'm on Instagram, Mr. Bobby Bones. And if you like this podcast, heck, even if you don't, if you have a second, go and rate this thing with all the stars. Is it 5 stars or 4?
5 stars.
5 stars. Give a 5 stars. Write a comment. And we appreciate that because it moves us up the podcast rankings. And if we're up higher, more people see it when they're just looking for something to listen to.
Yeah, when you're scrolling through, they'll be like, oh, what's this?
Yeah. So check it out. All right, that's it. We do need to change. Which, by the way, hey, where's Joe in here? Joe, Mike, you guys have done a good job on that new thing where it's like me and the artist.
Yeah.
You like see her face, whatever. It's a good. We need to change the main BobbyCast image. Because when I'm, you can tell me why we can't or I shouldn't. But when I'm scrolling, other people have cool pictures. Who knows what the heck a BobbyCast is?
Mm-hmm.
I just named it that 2.5 years ago because like, I don't know what to name it. We'll just call it something, the BobbyCast. There's really not, I didn't know what to name it. What is your thought?
I've seen other people kind of take that now.
What?
Like putting their name in cast after you did it?
I don't know. I don't think I invented that.
Okay.
But I have seen people right. But again, I didn't invent that. But yes, people I know.
Yeah, that's it's been close to us.
Which is weird. Like, yeah. But again, I didn't invent that. But we should change, not the name of the podcast, obviously, but the header to be more attractive.
Okay.
Because when I'm scrolling through looking for like a sports podcast to listen to, I find a fun picture. I'm like, oh, it looks fun.
So like a...
I don't know. Maybe even a face on it. You know, when I have put my books out, I never wanted to put my picture on the front of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, no, you need to put a picture on the front of the book because people feel like they can see who's writing it, whose voice it's coming from if they don't know. We should do something like that.
Okay.
We can keep the same dark, straight colors, but yeah, we should do that. All right, here we go. This is Michael Hobby from 1,000 Horses. By the way, check out Velvet's Edge with Kelly Henderson, a lifestyle podcast for women. Yeah, there you go. All right, here you go. Michael Hobby. Welcome to episode 223 with Michael Hobby of 1,000 Horses. You know, I was looking at, I didn't realize, you guys don't ever spell out the 1,000. I mean, do the numbers, do you?
No, the numbers are wrong.
See, the 21 Pilots has the thing, too, where they don't put the number. It's spelled T-W-E-N-T-Y. And you guys are 1,000. No, do people spell it out, and does that annoy you?
I mean, I got over it. But yeah, everybody writes 1,000, like the numbers and horses. And I'm, you know, after a while, you're like, well, I mean, whatever. We're happy to be here.
Was that a creative conversation early on to where, okay, we're just going to, we're spelling it. We're not doing numeral.
Well, where it came from was a song title that we had called 1,000 Horses. That's just how we wrote the song. So when we came up with it, we didn't have a band name at the time. We had a terrible band name. But it was a, we had to come up, we were signed to a label in Interscope, and we had to come up with this, you know, they were like, we got to have a band name in like 2 weeks, like no pressure. So, you know, we get out the whiteboard, everybody writes down a bunch of ridiculous names. I mean, Space Wolf.
Nice.
Was a name.
Space Wolf.
Yeah.
Did you guys lean in Space Wolf's direction?
Personally, I like Space Wolf.
I like Space Wolf, but I also like Space Hog, and it makes me feel like...
That's what, and you know what? That came up. Electric Buffalo.
Okay.
Was animal theme.
Here's a question. Yeah, it sounds like you're going to the zoo. All your band names are different exhibits at the zoo. You mentioned it, the first Interscope deal. So was that more of a rock thing, and is that why electric and space? Because if you're a country band, I don't hear a lot of, you know, astronaut type names in country music, but on an Interscope deal, because when I was over in pop and hip hop,
yeah,
Interscope is a big deal for rock and pop bands.
Yeah.
Was that more of the idea we'll be a straight ahead rock band first?
Well, no, I mean, we were always like a southern rock band. I mean, we all come from South Carolina and Georgia, and that was a big influence with us musically and with country music. You know, Alan Jackson was my first concert, so like we were listening to that constantly in the house. And then, you know, my older brother got into the grunge rock phase, so he was always doing that. And then, so, I mean, we were a southern rock band. And like, you know, how the thing came about was they were looking to put together a group. I don't know if you remember that back in the day of like a Eagles type thing. And
Interscope was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my name came across as, you know, to meet with them. And then when I met with them, you know, I told them, I was like, well, guys, I got my own band.
Where do you go to meet with them?
Well, you get an email from like a guy, Desmond Child was like the guy that set me up. Like my wife Caroline introduced me to Desmond because she knew him through Victoria.
So do you go to New York to meet with him? I'm just curious about what building this is in.
Like, they came to town.
So they came to Nashville.
Yeah.
And they said, we're them. We'd like to meet with you. Yeah. And they wanted
So I can give you the whole story if you want to hear how the whole Interscope thing. Our first record deal we ever got came about.
How old are you, by the way, when this starts?
I was 20.
Okay.
Yeah. Been in town. I moved here when I was 18, so 05. So yeah, I was 20. Anyways, I met Desmond Child through Victoria Shaw and Caroline.
No idea who that is, by the way. I would play cool and act like I know Desmond Child.
Huge songwriter.
Okay.
Yeah, like Living on a Prayer, Bon Jovi. I mean, huge Aerosmith hit, Angel, like big songwriter. So I was stoked when I got to meet this guy. He wrote a bunch of huge hits. And I guess a lady like Katy Perry's, what was that song? Waking Up in Vegas?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he called. I went to his house and played him some like demos that we had. And he was like, okay, cool. And he's like, I'll be in touch. And I was like, all right, we'll see you later. So he kind of took me under his wing, and he introduced me to a guy, Brian Howes, who had an imprint with Interscope. And he's the guy that like started Hinder and founded them and produced that record. And he called his boss, who was Jeff Sosnow, who was the head of A&R at Interscope, and said, hey, I got this kid, and he's got a band, and I think they're really great. You want to come to town and see him? And he's like, sure. So like next week he flew in. We get an email from Jeff's assistant to meet him at the Hermitage Hotel.
How nervous do you get though when you get the email saying someone's going to come watch your band that could make they could change your life?
I think showcases are the worst, like for artists to do. I mean, a conference room showcase to where they set up the tables and everybody comes in at 6 o'clock for a show. I've never quite gotten that, but it's worked for a lot of people, so great. And anyway, so we go meet him at the Hermitage Hotel. We go in his room. He's got 4 chairs, like set up in front of his bed. And he hops in his bed and he goes, okay, cool, play me some songs. And we got our acoustic guitars and we run through a song in this little hotel room. And he goes, okay, play me another one. And so on and so forth. And he goes, all right. And he's a very methodical guy. He's very quiet. And he's like, can you play electric for me tomorrow? And we're like, yeah, I mean, hell yeah, we can play whatever you want to do. Books a room at SIR. We go in. And honestly, it's crazy that the people he brought with him, he brought Dave Cobb with him, which we didn't know Dave at the time. And then an attorney and then another guy. Anyways, we play one song and he walks up to the stage and he goes, welcome to Interscope Records. And we thought, this is the greatest day of our life. We just signed a major deal. Holy cow.
You didn't have a name at this point?
Well, we did. It was called Sterling Y, which is the name that Bill and I, our guitar player, came up with back in South Carolina when we started playing music together when we were teenagers. And we moved to town together. So anyways, we knew that name wasn't going to work because we didn't like it either. But I was saying, naming a band's tough. So anyways, 2 weeks later, we're in L.A. We're playing for Jimmy Iovine, you know, at his little club. He's the final say-so of anybody that gets signed. So we go to his little club. It's called the Tom Tom Club. It's right across the street from their office in Santa Monica. We play 3 songs. Jeff says, we're good to go. We go to the Rainbow Room, like old school style, and celebrated. And then pick Dave to do our first little 6-song EP.
What's the conversation, though, at the celebration? Because, again, sounds like a whirlwind. Hey, we're coming to town. They come to town. You play. Then you play 1 song. And then it's like you're in. But now let's go get really into L.A. Then you're in. I mean, at that point, you've been through about 5 stages. It's like a callback and a callback and a callback.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then they go, yeah, you're in. Let's go celebrate. What is that? What are you thinking at the celebration? Like, what is your head wrapping around right then?
Well, you know, like everybody's verbally like committed. But then you got to negotiate your contract, which, you know, they always say, well, you know, hopefully everything works out with us negotiating. So, you know, and that takes, they'll tell you it takes a month, but it takes 6. I don't care what anybody says. We've done a few of them now and it's that. But yeah, we just celebrate and like, hey, we got a team and like all these people are around and, you know, they make you feel like you're on top of the world and you feel great because you're just some kids that landed a record deal. Now you're in Los Angeles on Sunset and everybody's stoked about your band. I mean, it was a dream come true for us. I mean, I still look back on it and think about those memories.
So Sterling Y is going to make
here.
You're here. Did you guys, were you going to stay in Nashville? Was that the plan?
Yeah. So when we picked Dave Cobb to do the little EP that we did, he had a house in Silver Lake. So we went
Los Angeles.
Yeah, Los Angeles. Yeah, California. So we went out there and stayed with him, and we spent 3 weeks recording in his little basement. You know, this was before Dave was Dave, and he was just doing records too. And we made the EP and then went home. And then it came out just digitally, like a little release. We were on tour, you know, in our van.
What year was this?
This was 2010.
Okay, so streaming really wasn't a super thing. Yeah, you could download.
Yeah, we were talking about, we were like going to get high MySpace plays.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, we're on tour. It's like 6 months into touring, and we're out just rough. We'd always been in a van, but this tour was like just brutal, like 3 months at a time. And we get a call from, it's raining in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'll never forget. We just got off a Skynyrd cruise. We did the Lynyrd Skynyrd Simple Man cruise. And we're about to start back up. And we're in a hotel in Fort Lauderdale, raining like crazy. And our manager calls us and says, Interscope's let go of all rock bands and rock department. They've shut down the division, the label of DGC. And we're just like, oh, man.
How does that conversation get to that point? Did you take the call, by the way? Were you the one?
That, okay. I'm always the guy that takes the call.
do you remember, because there are certain times in my life where I can vividly remember looking at my phone and seeing a call and answering it and knowing every part of the call, right? There are three or four times in my life. Do you remember that call?
Yes, absolutely.
And how does your manager warm you up to that, or does your manager go right to it? Like Michael, what? You just got dropped.
Well, it was, you kind of could feel it in the air anyways, you know? Because we'd had conversations before, because the label wasn't really doing anything and we couldn't get really any answers. And that's always a pretty big red flag. And then we talked to some other friends that were bands on the roster, and they were getting the same thing. And then, so the call, when I answered it, I knew it was going to be, you guys are going to be okay, or we got to figure something out. And it was, you're dropped and we got to figure something out.
What do you do with the tour? Do you keep going?
Yeah, we had to finish it.
Everything was booked already?
Yeah, I mean, and what's funny is then our agent quit right after that, of course, classic. And then our management, we parted ways, but we finished the tour, and then we came back home to Nashville and like regrouped.
Were you 1,000 Horses at this point?
Yes, we were. Okay. Yeah, we were already 1,000 Horses at this point. So Sterling Wild was dead when we did that deal, and then 1,000 Horses was born in Dave's garage.
So, okay, so you're in Florida. The whole thing disintegrates. There is no imprint on that the rock part of Interscope is done.
We're done.
So not just you. Anyone else get dropped of note that you can think of?
Big bands like Marilyn Manson and Papa Roach and like some other things. And like if you weren't really in the pop world, it was pretty much done.
Because boy bands, and they've been humongous in pop.
Yes.
Like in my time in pop, they were probably the biggest record label that would constantly blow acts up. Like Interscope was massive.
Yeah, I mean, they had a bunch of huge, I mean, they still have huge stuff, but yeah, I guess who was on, like, was it NSYNC?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Limp Bizkit was huge, and Eminem, and...
So you get dropped.
Flashbacks.
You go back to Nash. How much longer do you have to tour, and are you just defeated?
Like 6 months.
You had 6 months more
touring?
Yeah,
because this was January, and our last date was in, like, June or July.
Okay, so you're still out, you're grinding, trying to figure yourself out while you're grinding it?
Yeah, no tour support, and we weren't making any money. I mean... anything. So you get crafty. We come home. We didn't really know what we were going to do. You know, we had a bunch of songs that we had written. So we regrouped and, you know, all the new material leaned like where we are now, you know, as a Southern rock country band. And, you know, we just kind of started plugging away at that. And, you know, we signed it with CAA. They came to the table, and then we met our manager, a new manager at the time, Scott McGee and Doc McGee. And then that's when we met Jimmy Harnon at Republic or Big Machine and signed a deal with them.
So how long between you getting dropped and you signing a new deal?
4 years.
And then what's the celebration like the second time you sign?
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, it's different. It's always different the second time. But what was crazy about that is, you know, we're kind of a band that always bets on ourselves in any type of defeat. And just, you know, if you don't stop, it won't stop is kind of our mentality. So what we did we had to, Dave would record us because he moved to town too. So he'd record us and we'd exchange for recording. We'd clean his studio or we'd help him move gear and he could use our band trailer and things like that. So one day we were like, man, we got to make a full length record. Like we can't make two or three songs here and there and this. So we all got on our phones and called our credit card companies to try to get a line of like to put it on a credit card, because Dave was like, pay the musicians, pay this, and don't worry about me, and we'll just make a 10, 12 song record.
Wow.
Yeah, huge, huge. And couldn't get any, no credit card.
Were you paying your bill on time, though?
Yeah, we didn't know. I don't even
know. That's a question, because if you're paying your bill on time.
Do you pay your bills on time in 21? I don't know.
That's a whole thing, though, is and I know a few people who have done that, who have said, hey, I'm going to kind of bet it all on myself. The most notable, and I don't know him, I met him, but I don't know him, is Kevin Smith, who did Clerks and Mallrats and Chasing Amy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So what his whole story is that he had no money. He wanted to make Clerks. So he opened a bunch of credit cards and put the whole thing on credit.
Yeah.
He was like, I believe in myself so much, I'm just going to finance the whole thing on credit. I bet you it's 100 to 1 didn't work out for people.
For sure.
You guys couldn't even get credit.
Yeah, we couldn't get credit.
You never even had the shot there. But so you do record the music.
So, yeah, what we did is I had a friend of mine who was the head of Avenue Bank, and he'd become a really good buddy. And he was always a fan of our band, and he believed in us. And I don't know if he likes people knowing this, but or if thinking banks should do this, but he gave us a line of credit. And he said, I'll never give you more than I know you can't pay me back sweeping my parking lots. And we're like, deal.
So, wow. So he hooked you up.
So he hooked us up.
How does he write that on paper? How does he?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I don't know. I mean, we talk about it now, but and we did it. And then that led to our deal, you know, with Big Machine and Republic with Jimmy. Because we took that chance, we got that opportunity. Before the even record was done, they'd heard it. And so we just kind of moved right into, you know, that world.
What were you doing for 4 years to pay the bills?
I worked at Buckle in Cool Springs.
Is that, because here, my experience with the Buckle, not a great one.
I apologize for that.
Used to go there a lot, but here's my thing with the Buckle.
Yeah.
I would go into the Buckle, and I'd need a pair of jeans. And so I'd go in, and I would say, I'm a 31, and I'd find me a pair of jeans that I like.
Okay.
And I don't like my jeans too shaved, or I don't like fancy pockets, you know, so I don't like my jeans.
No flair.
I don't like the jeans to be the story of who I am.
Yeah, no flair.
I just like the jeans to be there.
Yeah, right?
The rest of me will define who I am.
Dingy.
My jeans are just there. They're placeholders for the rest of me.
Yeah.
And so I get my jeans, and I put them on. I go into the dressing room, put them on, and all of a sudden, there's like 7 things coming over the top of the dressing room door. Like, this shirt will look great with those
jeans.
That's it. Here's a belt. Here's a t-shirt. What do you think about this? Here's a corset. I'm like, I'm going to need a corset. So you had to do that at the Buckle?
I did. I didn't really like that either, so I would kind of figure out ways to not be that guy.
Did they tell you to do that, though?
Absolutely.
Like, if someone grabs something, you need to grab things that match
and
throw it over?
Yeah, exactly.
Did you make commission?
Yeah.
I would do that, too, then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just lost a lot of hate for that, because if it's commission, I would do that, too.
Well, now when I go into stores, like if I see shirts unmessed, I'll fold them up, because people would come in, like, you do this immaculate table. It's take you an hour, and then people just come in and just throw your stuff away. I'm like, guys, come on, let me grab it.
Aren't people awesome and sucky? Because that's what I learned when working in service. Because I had to wait at tables, I worked at a marina, I did maintenance on a golf course. I have all these jobs where people could really make my day so much easier and better with just a little bit of being nice, kind.
Yep.
But they could also really piss me off and ruin my day too by doing things, especially in the restaurant business.
Especially,
I worked at Hobby Lobby, and where people would come in and just knock over complete racks.
And
displays, like you're talking about with shirts.
Just fix it.
You have to do it. Takes like 1 second to fix it.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, because I want to see displays now, and it'll give me PTSD, display PTSD.
Yeah.
I got to fix it back for them, because I know somebody's struggling with that.
That's what I feel the same way.
And so when I see, it's funny that you say that about shirts, because I do that with corner displays, like edge displays.
Yeah.
So you're working at Buckle. How long did you work there?
Just like a few years off and on. And then our guitar player, Zach, had a photo booth rental company. So we would go work for him, like doing photo booth events. And
like setting it up at parties.
Set it up and like stand there. And he'd pay us to do that, because that was his side hustle. So we all kind of jumped in on that.
And you guys all decided you were going to stay together.
We did, yeah.
Was there ever a minute where you go, you know, I may try the Michael Hobby Project?
No, I mean, I never wanted, you know, I've always wanted to be in a band. And I've never really had like a big desire to do a solo thing. Even when opportunities were presented, it was always like, well, no, I want to, these are my brothers and we grew up together and we're best friends and our families are best friends. And, you know, this is what we do. That's kind of was always my thing.
So you're working at Buckle, you're working the photo booth, you're just hustling. so you can hustle harder at something else later. Because there's a difference in hustling at something you love.
Yeah.
You were hustling to do something you loved.
Yes, absolutely.
So you're making money to pay the bills. Were you guys playing together at all?
Yeah, we'd play in town.
Okay.
We'd tour regionally. Like, we'd go out and do these gigs, and people would give us opportunities. And, I mean, we took every opportunity we could get.
Would anyone ever see a buckle and go, "Hey, I saw you play a show"?
No, I don't think so.
So
that'd have been cool. That'd have made my day.
Yeah, yeah, right?
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah, that's what the whole store basically is, fresh leather,
yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
TECOVAS.com. TECOVAS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
Hey, it's Amy Brown here to talk about the incredible work that's being done by St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and to ask you today to join me in becoming a partner in hope. When you make a donation to St. Jude, you're helping an organization that has helped push the overall childhood cancer survivor rate from 20% to more than 80%. And I can tell you from personal experience, that number and the hope that it brings is invaluable. Families do not have to worry about a thing. Treatment is covered, travel, housing, food. And when you're a family that's going through this, like imagine you're a parent, your kid gets cancer. You need to focus on that child. You don't need to be worrying about other things. And financial stuff can get really stressful. St. Jude covers it. Your support means families never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment. And when you sign up for just $19 a month, you're going to get the new This Shirt Saves Lives tee. So join me in helping St. Jude in the fight against childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope and text Bobby to 785-833. That's B-O-B-B-Y to 785-833.
You're playing a little bit and you cut this record. And who hears it, though, as you're making it and they go, "Hey, this may be a cool thing for us"?
Well, I guess our manager, Scott, you know, was with us. He just signed on with us because he'd heard some demos. And, yeah, I didn't even know that he was playing it for people, you know. So I guess he was playing golf, he said, and with Jimmy Harden. And he played it for him on, like, the last hole. And Jimmy was like, "Oh, let me hear it again." And then, speaking of showcases, we get to do the awkward conference room showcase for him and his staff. And then we do it again for Scott Borchetta at Big Machine. Which was funny because, like, this showcase, I messed up the first song. Like, I didn't, no one knows this, but I sang the chorus twice and I never went into the verse, but the band covered me. So the chorus was the best part, anyways. And you know, Scott's sitting, like, right here in front of me, like, just as nerve wracking as it gets, you know? And I mess up the first song. So I'm like, you know,
did they know you messed up?
No.
Okay. So really, you didn't mess up.
No.
Because if they're covering you and you don't, because I mess up a lot.
But you know that feeling you get?
Yeah.
And you got to pull yourself out.
And you're off
out
balance.
Of,
you're off balance.
Off balance.
Yeah.
So luckily we pulled ourselves together and kept playing songs. And that, and you know, when we left there, we weren't sure. That wasn't like a slam dunk. And
talk about though for a second, because I've been in these rooms where you're playing for someone and they're giving, there's like four people watching you and you're pouring your heart into something and they're looking at you like this. They're just nodding their head. Mm-hmm. Really not. You know, it's different than a show where people are pumped.
Yeah.
They've seen 1,000 bands come through. You really can't read them. They almost don't want you to read them.
I could agree with that. Yeah.
And even if they're loving you, they may crack a smile or, but for the most part,
they never show their cards.
They never show it. And for you as a performer, you're playing towards something that isn't giving you anything back. And that's the hardest to do.
Yeah.
Is to play towards something that isn't reciprocating anything back.
Yep.
And that's what you guys do as artists in these. You talk about how weird it is to go into these rooms and do these showcases. I mean, I have to imagine that's what it was like playing in front of Borchetta.
Yeah. I mean, it led to great opportunity, but, and I recommend everybody. I mean,
well, yeah, if you get the shot, you do. But it's like comedians who go on Saturday Night Live, they talk about performing in front of Lorne Michaels, and he doesn't move. And even though he loves them, he's just like, all right, next.
Yeah, you get a phone call the next day of good or bad. And if it's good, and that's it. It's just like, okay, all right, here we go. Let's get to work. But
you play it, and then how long until you know that the deal at Republic Big Machine is actually going to work for you guys?
We got a little word that night, but the next day.
What's the word that night? What's a little word that night mean?
Like, you did great. Feels good. We'll be in touch.
When you left the room, did it feel good?
No, I don't think so. I don't think any of us were like super stoked about, you know, how it went down. And plus, I'm in my head about messing up. And anyways, it, you know, but I was like, you know, we're all positive and optimistic. It's like, well, shit. I mean, we did it.
So. What songs did you play? Remember?
Oh man, old songs, like song "Landslide." That's I think it's still out. "Tennessee Whiskey" was a song we played. A bunch of other songs we didn't end up cutting, and I mean, we played. I think they wanted us. We played like 10 songs.
Holy crap!
I mean, it was a that's
you did
what
a
I'm
whole
saying.
Record.
Yeah, we played like a whole set. Like I even thought I was like, really?
Did
another
you
one?
Stand up or sit down?
We're standing up.
Yeah,
right weird. At the end of the conference.
Awkward. Really weird. Yeah, that's part of it though.
Yeah, it is.
So you get the call the next day. Tell me about that phone call.
Yeah, our manager called us and said we're doing a deal, and we did the deal. I mean, that was pretty much it. Round two, as we call it.
When you go into round two, you've been through it once, so you're probably not as wide-eyed and just like life has changed, but you're like, we got a shot again, right? It's got to be a different optimistic feeling than it was the first time.
Yeah. I mean, you feel lucky for sure, and then you're like, okay. Like, you don't sweat the small stuff because you're like, well, this will take a while, and they'll get it all worked out, and you know.
Do you get money initially when you sign a deal?
No, we did not.
Did you have to keep working your side hustles after you signed the deal?
I did a pub deal. I got a pub deal with Warner Chappell before that.
So you're being paid to write.
Yeah. So that took me out of the working force game, which was like about probably a year before we did that deal. I got a pub deal. Yeah.
Did you ever have any cuts?
No, I mean, not, no.
Do you feel like they signed you because they knew as an artist you would probably hit soon and they wanted you as a writer because of what you were going to write for you as an artist? Did you feel like there was anything there with that?
You know, I think when it comes to artists and writers in town, the separation is if you're signed as a writer and an artist, you're viewed as an artist, you know, and there's a difference between just being a sole writer, you know, like a lot of our friends that we have. But so I think that's, that you know, people, writers and artists talk about that all the time. Like, what's the difference? Like, why can't I be an artist and a writer for other people as well? Or, you know, why can't these songs be cut and I'll just cut these for my project and do this? You know, that's something that comes up all the time. I had that conversation, you know, last night with a friend. It's like, I don't know.
I guess my point is,
yeah, what do you,
if I thought that you in the next year or two would be good enough as an artist to get a deal, I would try to sign you as a writer because my assumption is you're going to write songs for you as an artist and that's where I'm going to make my money.
Totally, absolutely.
So do you feel like that someone had faith in you as an artist a year prior that signed you to a publishing deal, or they just saw you as a writer, Michael Hobby, the writer, and signed you to a pub deal?
I think they just saw me as a writer, an artist who writes his own songs.
So level one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. That's good. That's someone investing money in you a year prior to you landing an artist deal.
Yeah.
Because a lot of my friends who are artists, they get a pub deal for a year and a half. They don't have a record deal, but whoever signed them just was betting early money that they would get signed eventually. Mm-hmm. And then if you're an artist writer, you're going to write most of your own stuff.
Yeah.
And that's how you're going to make your money back, because those, you're going to get cuts because you're writing your own cuts.
Yep.
So you go over and you guys are like, wow, we got a deal. So what do you do as a band? Like, what's the first thing when you get a deal the second time? What do you do?
Well, we went, keep writing. So, and we kept writing. We, you know, booked studio. We went right back in to finish the record and kind of redo some stuff. And it was like September of 2014. We did that. And I wrote all the way up till the day we started the record. And thank God I did, because the last song I wrote for the record was Smoke. And it came in the 11th hour. Turn it in, first song we cut, and then first single. And, you know, then it all, that began.
Which is crazy. Here's a little bit of Smoke from 1,000 Horses. And we'll get around to it being a number one song in just a second. But what's interesting is the last song I wrote got on the record, ended up being the single. Because it's not just you guys this happened to. A lot of friends go, where's the last song I wrote? Now, my theory is this.
Okay.
That it's the last song you wrote, and it's the one you for sure remember, you're very passionate about because you just finished it. It's so top of mind, and you've been writing so much, and you know what you're writing for, because you're writing for a record.
Yeah.
Now, I could be totally wrong in this situation.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. You're like calibrated, you know, of what you're doing, and yeah, the excitement
and what you need.
And yeah, it's like that focus is like really strong, especially like up to the, you know, the game.
Did you feel like you were trying to write a radio single when you wrote Smoke? Like, did you walk in the room and go, all right, we need a radio song. We need to hit.
No, I was just in the room to write, you know, and that's what's funny. Like, I wasn't even like planning on writing anymore because they told me that the record was done, but I just like to write. And I had this write lined up, and which was with Ross Copperman and John Knight.
Which, by the way, massive.
Huge. So, yeah, like, I'm not going to go into that.
Yeah, massive write with guys who are just monster songwriters, producers. So
all the above. Those guys are incredible.
What's that room like? You walk into the room, and again, I'm asking you to pull deep from the memory tank.
Yeah, yeah.
You walk into the room, and how does this concept come up?
Okay, yeah, so the concept came up. I walk in, and I met Ross and John, and I was wearing a Blackberry Smoke hat, a camouflage Blackberry Smoke hat. I still have it. And you know, we're sitting there and like hash around ideas, and Ross has got a vibe going, and I think he said,
was he building a track going like, what do you think about this?
Yeah,
that's what he does.
That's what he does. He does his thing. And, he's like, let's write a song about, what about the title Smoke? You know, he's looking at my hat, and I was like, okay, that could be cool. And like, then you start hashing and it's like, well, what about an addictive relationship? It's toxic, but compared to, you know, a cigarette in a way. And then it just kind of fell out. I mean, it didn't take us very long at all. And then we had it. He sent me the demo at midnight that day. I played it and sent it to my guys and sent it to the label and management. And then the next morning, just the phone lit up. And we're like, this is the one. Like, this is the first single. Let's go.
Crazy.
Crazy
how it was a last minute thing. You got the demo in on time. Everything.
Yeah, I think we started recording September 5th. I wrote it September 3rd.
Whenever you're nailing something with Ross, you go...
That's the, his enthusiasm is what makes the write so much fun.
Smash,
such a good one. Smash. Yeah, he's got his thing. That's Ross.
So you write this right on the edge of the record. It's going to become the first single. When you sign a new deal, how much of them is picking the single? How much of you cared that they picked the single?
I mean, I think in any situation, whatever they felt was the strongest way to lead.
And whatever they were going to put their efforts behind.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's their job, not ours, is the way I always look at it. I mean, you can voice your opinion, but that was, you know, we're just in there and like, this thing's happening fast. And, you know, they're like, we're going to go with this one and it's getting great response. And you know how that world goes. And so we're like, hell yeah, that sounds great. What, you know, we love all these songs. So
it goes to radio. And did you feel like it was going to be a success at first? It wasn't on the verge. Was that the big?
It was, yeah.
So, which is the biggest thing you can get as a new artist, new song, because it's the biggest company playing your song the most amount of times. And so, holy crap, there's a lot that's happened quickly. New deal, wrote a song on the record. Yeah. It's going to be the single. Now you're on the verge.
Yeah. And then when it debuted at like 27.
Which is not normal.
No.
Yeah.
So we're sitting here going, wait, this is how this works? You know, I mean, kind of blown away by it. And then, you know, that's when it all began. And, you know, you learn a lot in that time period. And we were just going a million miles a minute in that process, and it yeah, and then it just kept climbing and kept going, and everything was perfect.
What was kind of the apex of that smoke run where the song was killing it? Like, you got to do something real cool. I don't know if it's a TV show, if it was a festival. Like, where did you go, holy crap, this thing, this song has, right now has taken us to some, do this?
Man, I mean, I guess, you know, getting to do like Kimmel was awesome. And you know, we did the morning show, Good Morning America, or I think, yeah. And, but like some of those big festivals, like the Tortugas, I mean, I remember, I mean, Route 91 festival we did in Vegas, like 16, and that was like, I still have a video of that where these, the entire place is lit up and like the whole crowd at night is just, and that for me was a moment where it was like, wow. I mean, cause you know, when a song, it went number one and then you're out on these tours, but when you go back out on another tour, that's when you start to see that people have really heard it. And you know, there's moments like that, you know, Tortuga was one of those moments. And then being out on the road with like Al Dean, you know, towards the end of that tour, you started to see the arena light up, you know, and those are things, you know, you'll never forget still to this day, you know, when it happens.
So smoke kills it. We're going to run through a couple of these other ones. So That Ain't No Drunk Dial. Here's this one here. This ain't no drunk dial. So this one peaks, according to my chart here, at 23.
Yeah.
So after you have a number one and a song goes to 23 and kind of peters out, what's the conversation like in between the band members when that happens?
I mean, to be honest with you, that was super stressful, you know, for where we were at and what we were doing. And, you know, that was the point where things really started to like get wobbly, you know, that quick, you know, as quick as that other one happened is as quick as it got wobbly. So it put us in a very, I mean, it was a stressful time, you know, I mean, it was when tension started to build between, you know, our situation with label in a way. And then, you know, we were like, what's going on? You know, like, you know, we were just frustrated, you know, and like nothing was happening. But why does this song look like, could it have gone farther? I mean, it got that high in a very short period of time. So we're like, well, let's keep pushing, you know.
Did you feel like your feeling was that the label stopped before they should have? And your feeling, right or wrong, was your feeling as a band, man, you got to keep pushing?
You know, we didn't know any. We kind of trusted them that was the right thing to do, to be honest with you. And we didn't really know any better. We thought, well, that, you know, if they want to come off of it, then they'll come off it. We'll come with something else, and that's okay. You know, let's just keep rocking. But looking back, I think maybe pushed a little harder, you know, in our end, but we didn't really know any better.
So you have a couple other songs. Southernality. Southernality. And then Preaching to the Choir.
Yep, Preaching to the Choir.
Didn't work, at least radio-wise.
Yeah, that was when we were, like, talk about timing. That's when we were, like, in the position to get out of this, like, situation that we were in. So that song came out, and then we parted ways.
How did that go down?
It was just more of like, you know, they wanted us. It just was, the relationship wasn't working anymore.
What did they want from you that you didn't want from you?
Well, I think it got it to the point of trying to change things to a big degree for us.
Like fundamentally, they wanted to change something with you guys?
Yeah, like what, you know, just, you know, what we musically and like recording wise, and like we started trying different hats on. You know, we got in that situation where we're trying different things and trying different people, and we're cutting, you know, an outside song, and we're doing this, which is great. We love that song. We think it's a great song. And it just got really, like, cloudy and, like, really, like, heavy, you know, and it just wasn't, the relationship wasn't the right where it needed to be. So we just both agreed to, you know, walk away, and they were super great about it. We were super great about it. We went out and had drinks after it, you know, and we took our things and we went home, and then they continued to do what they did. So it wasn't like a big, you know, fight or argument or anything. It was more like, okay, we need to go be a band, and, you know, our career is still here, and before anything else happens, like, can we go do our thing? And they said, you know, we just all agreed on that. That's what was, it really was a blessing, and they changed our life, you know, with that, with what we did on that first record.
And the difference between not having a record deal after the first one And the second one is people now know your music and you can still go tour and make money.
Yeah.
You can go and actually, so even though you're not in a record deal, people now know 1,000 Horses because of the success that you had.
Yeah.
So you're able to go out and play shows and actually maintain a lifestyle.
Yep.
Do they still, when you broke off, how long do they have like part of your deal, part of your touring? Or was it all like?
It's right then, done.
Nice.
Yeah. So yeah, we went back on the road and regroup. What are we going to do next? So, you know, we did like we did the first time. It's kind of wild to think about. But we had a bunch of songs, wrote a bunch of songs, called Dave, said, hey, we want to make a record.
Same guy. Same freaking guy.
We want to make a record.
Now, by the way, he's much elevated.
He's elevated. We're elevated. So we're all in a way better situation.
But you know each other.
And we've known each other for 10 years. So, I mean, Dave's like family to us and he calls us his little hippie brothers. So we call him and he goes, okay, cool. Well, come play me the music. So we sat, played him some music. He's like, all right. So we went to Hooters and he loves Hooters. And we had these little Hooters cards for a minute where you got free Hooters. So we went there all the time.
How'd you get a Hooters card?
A regional that worked for Big Machine had a friend that like, I don't know, owned Hooters or.
Is it like a gold card? We just go.
Yeah. It says, you know, you eat for free on us and. You just hand
for
it
how long?
A year at a time.
Holy crap! And did they cancel it at some point? Did the record label call and be like, "Wait, well, you got to drop their Hooters deal too"?
It wasn't a label thing; it was just her friend thing. Yeah. So, I mean, we had them for a couple of years, and then we didn't get them.
Would you take advantage of that? Would you go a lot?
Yeah, we would. Yeah, absolutely.
God, I had an Outback one.
That's cool.
I know it was really cool, and I forget the name of the company. Remember the name of the company, Mike?
Carrabba's?
Well, Carrabba's was part of it, too. But they all were owned. And they were like, here's a card. Go whenever you want. It was like Outback, Carrabba's, Bonefish Grill.
You gotta be kidding.
There were like four of them on this. I never used it.
This is a gold mine.
I know. And I was so scared of being the guy that was looking like he was going to take free food. I never used it. It sat in my wallet.
Bloomin' Brands.
Big tips. That's all you got to do.
Bloomin' Brands. Yep. Right. I know. I just felt like Looking back, I wish I would have used it a lot.
Well, you had a good variety.
I did.
We were stuck in one spot.
Yeah, that's a good spot though.
Yeah.
So good wings. You're going to Hooters. He goes to Hooters. What's he do at Hooters to decide?
He knew we had these cards, so like we got
it.
A bunch of wings, and he loves. You know, we all love Hooters, and he said, "All right, cool. We're gonna make the record, and this is what we're gonna do. But just gotta schedule it, and we'll do it. But it's just gonna be us." And me and you guys, and that's it. We're like, great. So get it scheduled. We lock ourselves in his studio in RCA for a month or 3 weeks in September. Another September thing.
Where are you getting the money, by the way, to make this record?
We just are
You funded
touring.
It yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so you went on the road. You saved money for touring for the record.
Yeah, once again, bet on ourselves. Mm-hmm. Same guy at the bank said, well, I'll go in a little heavier this time if
Is that
you need
right?
me to.
Good for him.
Yeah. Well, we'd done well in the first one.
Yeah, true. You didn't make him look smart already.
No.
Did you pay that one back all the way?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Great.
Immediately. That was one of the greatest things, you know, to pay off. It was
isn't to prove someone right really like a wonderful blessing?
Absolutely.
To prove someone right that believes in you.
Absolutely.
For a lot of my life, people were, and I felt this way, and you may feel this way too. For a lot of it, I was trying to prove the naysayers wrong.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't think I or you or anyone else would turn out to, you know, we come from places where a lot of people don't, And it's not because they can't, it's because they don't chase their dreams.
Absolutely.
When you're told that your dreams can't come real, sometimes you go, more than me, I shouldn't chase them. And I think that happens a lot in places like where we're from. But whenever people would say, nah, you can't do it because of where you came from, for a lot of my life, I thought, I'm just going to prove them all wrong. But then there was that point where it flipped for me, and it was, I'm going to prove them all right that bet on me. Or that invested in me.
I've never actually thought about it like in flipping it of like the people that really believe in you and letting them have the glory as well.
And to me, it has become one of, you know, my favorite things to do is to go to someone and say, hey, you believed in me and I was able to achieve this because of what you did for me back. And it's also encouraged me time and time again to believe in other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because since you're chasing the people that helped you, you're like, man, I'm so grateful that people bet on me. And you start betting other people because of this. And so when you mention your friend, I'm like, man, how great is that you got to go and prove him right?
Yeah. It's a big win for all
of us.
It's
a big win. Yeah. You pay him back, and he's like, I'm going to give you even more. Do you still owe him right now?
No. Oh, no, we're all
nice,
good.
Nice.
I try to eliminate all those things.
So you go into the studio, yeah. And how long does it take you to record the new record? And how many songs do you got?
We did 10 songs. Took about 3 weeks, and then we did some overdubs and stuff after the fact. But, you know, and then we get a phone call from Elektra, a label, Dave's imprint that he has through Warner and Atlantic, and they heard it, you know. He obviously, Dave sent it to him, and they called and said, hey, we love this, and we want to offer you another deal. And
what's the third deal party like?
That's now, this is what gives us, because we're in this now, you know, that, you know, yeah, what is the thing? Yeah.
At that point,
maybe we can figure this out together, man.
And it's like, well, all right, well, let's eat and get back to work.
Yeah, that's pretty much, yeah. It's like, great, what's the plan?
Yeah.
You know, where everybody's a little sharper, everybody's a little more knowledgeable of how, you know, what, how you think it works, I guess. And, you know, and that was it. So now that's, you know, that's where we are now with this new record, and it's about to, you know, come out here in a little bit. And it just to, you know, always to keep going, I think, is what, you know, I always tell people. They ask, you know, people ask you, like, what's your advice or what's your thing? It's like, just don't stop, and, like, don't be afraid to jump, and just keep kind of rocking. I mean, you're going to hit, I mean, for us, I mean, hell, to go from, like, where we, like, that first song to, like, dropping back down to, like, coming back, you know, it's peaks and valleys.
And there are a lot of them.
And there's a ton of them.
It's funny you bring that up. I have a whole deal that I talk about, because you've had to go through no, 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 yes, no, 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 yes. You know, it's a lot of no's to get to that one yes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you find that thing that you love so much, it could be music, it could be horses, it could be
whatever it is.
It could be hugs. I don't.
Everybody loves a hug.
If you find that thing that you love so much and someone telling you no doesn't keep you from loving it, that's what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as someone telling you no makes you go, well, maybe it shouldn't be, that's not your thing anymore. Like, you guys are being told no, not for us, or yes, and then no again a lot. And it sounds like you guys were never like, all right, well, maybe this isn't for us. It's not like you guys were always like, well, we may have to go work at the Buckle for a little bit, or do, you know, picture boots.
Yeah, we'll figure something out.
But, you know, it's that if people telling you no does not disenfranchise you at all, that's what you're supposed to be doing.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
Like, that is it, because that someone saying not for you, we're not going to, and you're like, that's good. Maybe it's not for you, but I'm going to keep going. That's how you know that's what you're supposed to be doing. And that's what's so cool about, I tell you what's coolest to me about you guys is that you're still a freaking band.
Yeah.
That you stayed together
through
some ups, but a lot of downs.
Yeah, thick and thin.
That's great. I mean, that's my favorite part of this whole story, frankly, is that you guys are still together. Because who knows what's going to happen? You may have 10 number ones. You may get another deal in 3 years. Hey, imagine that party. That party just,
what are we going to do then?
Take a nap. Yeah. Like, all right, I'm going to go take a nap. Celebration nap. We'll be back in a second.
Come on here. We'll talk about the chapter four.
Here's the new single, Drinking Song, from Thousand Horses. But everybody loves a drinking song to get you going when the week's been long. It goes good with a drink too strong. A glass raised every time it comes on. I guess he's my boss. I guess we're kind of peers, but he's the head of country for iHeartRadio. His name's Rod Phillips.
Yeah, Rod.
Rod came to me and he goes, hey, this is a month ago. I said, you heard that Thousand Horses new song? And he doesn't bring up music to me, and I don't bring up music to him unless it's kind of a, and we don't even talk about the songs that are already hits, because those are the ones, you know, the Al Deans and the Lukes, they're going to fly up the chart anyway.
Totally.
We don't get a lot of time to spend together, but he's one of my dearest friends and we work together, and he comes up and he goes, hey, you heard that new Thousand Horses song, Drinking Song? I don't even know if it was out yet. And I hadn't. And he was like, that's a good one. He never said that. He almost never says that.
Oh, that's great. That's great to
hear. And rarely does he bring songs to my attention.
Wow.
So he said, it was like, it's real good. So here we are. The song's out now. Like, what's happening with it? Like, is anybody playing it?
Yeah, no, not yet. They're gearing up for that whole plan.
So it's not, as of right now, that's not happening yet. Yeah, it's going to happen again.
It's coming.
Are you doing the whole? You going to stations and stuff?
You know, I don't know what they have planned for us with that. They're doing that whole
brutal.
I let them worry. You know, that's the people that do that.
Yeah.
But I mean, well, it's coming very soon. I mean, you know, it's out now, and then radio is right behind it.
Your voice is pretty distinct and very raspy and strong. You have a really strong singing voice. If you get sick,
yeah,
what the heck happens?
Oh man, you just hope that doesn't happen.
You ever had to cancel a show because you had no voice?
No.
Wow, is that right?
No, I did one time. Thought I was going to have to, and then I got a shot.
Yeah.
And whoa,
yeah.
Does that work?
Tell me about it. There have been a couple times where I'm like, I can't go on stage and do stand-up. I feel like crap.
I mean, you know, it was a tour.
Like, wow! And you go, and then but you feel like garbage.
God, the next day
after
you got to take the next week off.
Well, my thing is I'll book two or three shows in three, you know, consecutive nights.
Yeah.
And so I'll get this shot, and I'll get an IV and a shot, and I'll get if they can put it in any hole in my body, I'll take it. I don't care what it is.
Do you have anything? I love IVs.
Yeah, do you have anything to put in any of my holes? Let's go.
I'm the same way.
Yeah, medical, not medical, stick it in the hole. Yeah. Let's just see if it works.
Two bags of fluid, let's do it.
And so you get that shot, and you're like, oh, and your voice starts to come back a little bit.
Yep.
And you're like, I'm top of the world, baby.
Yeah.
And then you take it, and you crush, and then you feel like garbage, and you're like, I don't know if I go on the next night. You do it again, and you do it again.
Vicious cycle.
And then it just wallops you after that. But the show must freaking go on.
Got to play.
I got to pay for the lights of this podcast.
Yeah.
Got to go do
the
show.
It. Look at these lights. These are nice lights.
These are nice, expensive lights, people. You have a whole record that's going to come out?
Yep.
Oh, do you have a date on that yet?
No, not yet. So they're
pretty excited about it, though.
Man, it's been a long time since we put out a record, you know, since the first one. And we're just ready to get back at it and do what we love to do.
Your one-line Insta bio: husband to Caroline Hobby, father of Sunny.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the baby first. How much has the baby changed your life?
I mean, unbelievable. Like how much she's changed my life. You thought you loved something, and then we have her, and like the amount of love you feel for that child is like nothing you've ever felt before, at least for me. And Caroline says the same thing, but you know, like Caroline and I love each other. We're married. That's all great. But like with her, just watching her grow, and you know, it definitely drives you, and it makes you more like pay attention to everything that's around you. Cause you got a human that you got to take care of and set an example for and try to raise to be a good human, you know? And I think that's the thing about me is just, it's all fun too. Like I want to have fun with it and not be so serious, but you know, keep it. I don't know. Every parent's probably got a different story, but.
And when I have a baby, it's I'm going to do bits with it all the time.
Yeah.
I'm going to do like a puppet. I have a baby. It's going to be all bits all the time.
Yeah, I mean, you do the puppet thing. I mean, whatever. I spin her around my head.
Hide the baby.
Yeah. Put her in the lottery.
You and Caroline have been married for how long?
5 years. Yeah.
How's that going?
Going great.
Yeah. It better be the answer. Yeah. Can you imagine? I mean, it's all right.
I mean, I'm glad you have me on here. I want to get some things off.
As you've been married for 5 years, do you listen to every Caroline podcast?
Not every single podcast. I do when I go on like walks or runs, like I'll pop one in, like especially like a friend or something and listen to. I mean, she's got a very, you know, female audience.
Extremely female. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's like 100% female.
unless I'm listening just to see what's going on at 100%.
You may be the 1% that ticks in from time to time. So a lot of the topics of conversation aren't really a male thing for me, I guess, but she does an incredible job. I mean, the people come to the house and I get to meet all these awesome people that come in and people that we've known, and she's just got a gift for that thing, man.
She does. She's really good.
Yeah. And she always says, she's like, is this a stamp on my forehead that says, tell me your problems or something? I'm like, yeah. I mean, that's kind of been the name of the game for a long time. And, she's just done a really great job, and being a part of your thing with the iHeart and Bobbycast, she's loved it.
It's called Get Real with Caroline Hobby, if you want to check it out. And
check
the great thing is, I remember Caroline coming over, and I was like, hey, because I think she thought she was really good. I think she's really good, really talented. Yeah. She just hadn't been with the right person to actually show her what road to walk down.
Yeah.
And she was like, I never made any money off this, but I've been just grinding at it. And I was like, well, welcome to the world of, you know, art. Period.
Yes.
And she had done that in her band too.
That's right. She was an artist before that and a radio regional before that.
Done it
before that. I mean, she's done it all. And Wonder Woman.
But now she's actually making a little money doing a podcast.
Yeah.
Which is great because she's so good. And it's just
with a baby on her hip.
And I can just see it really turning into something really special for her. You know, you got to pay the bills. But if you find something you love, you tend to work harder at it and pursue it with a passion. And when you do pursue something with a passion, you work hard at it, that's when you're successful.
Yeah.
And you know, music, art, I just really see big things for her and what she's doing. So
I agree. Me too, man. If she puts her mind to it and puts her head down, I mean, I can't wait to see what she turns all this into because she's such a special person in that way and just is great at it.
Do you let her pick songs? Are you like, which one do you like?
I play her everything, yeah. And it's funny when like she's like, I don't like that. And I'm like, I don't know. You may be wrong. But sometimes they're mostly down there, right? I think everybody plays their wife or significant other, their music to see what they think. And
does she ever go, let's do a duet? Let me get on that.
No, we haven't done that yet. She always laughs about that. Maybe one day, you know, she's a great singer. So yeah,
that would be fun.
That would be fun.
Maybe like a Christmas song.
That'd be fun. Christmas song. Like, I want to do a Christmas song.
Right. Because then your band want to get mad. If it's like Michael and Caroline Hobby. Yeah, the Hobbies Christmas record. Yeah. Nobody gets mad at a Christmas record.
Yeah, bands don't get some upset awesome about that. Sweaters. And,
Let the Band Play On. That's the name of, what is that? What is that the name of? The new album, possibly?
Yeah the new album.
You've already named it. It just doesn't come out. It's just not out yet.
No, yeah. We're just getting a street date. So
it's like a baby that you have named. It's not out yet.
Yeah, it's not quite there.
What's up with Sonny, the name of the baby? What's the story of that?
So Sonny, it was a name that we just kind of randomly came up with. Her middle name's Grayson. So a lot of people don't know, but I had a brother that passed away when I was younger from cancer, and his name was Grayson. So I wanted to honor him with our family and her, you know, for his name, because he was such an incredible, you know, guy. And, you know, his life got cut short, unfortunately. But, you know, that was kind of my, like, honoring him, you know, in his life that he had and his impact on me. I mean, he was the one that encouraged me to do music, and he helped me buy my first guitar, and he was always there, and he was very wise, you know, for his age. And, you know, it holds a special place in my heart. And then to have her carry his name on is something that we thought would be special.
Let's fast forward 13 years. Sonny's 14 years old. She comes up. She goes, Dad, I want to be a country singer.
Oh, boy. I mean, if that's what she wants to do, you know.
What's the first piece of advice you give your 14-year-old daughter who wants to be a country singer?
Oh, man. First piece of advice. What would I have told myself? Oh. I mean, I first piece, write your own songs for sure, you know?
Yeah.
That would be somebody told me that. I don't know, stay away from guys.
Yeah. That's probably going to be whatever she is. You're going to say that anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
What's Newberry, South Carolina like?
Man, it is a little small town. Just a streetlight town. It's about 10,000 people, I think, there now. But just a little town. Everybody knows everybody. You know, we grew up about 15, 20 minutes outside of town on some land that my parents had. And so we were country kids, you know. And hey, everybody knew everybody in that town. Still do, still talk. I mean, it's a small town. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's similar to your small town.
Well, you guys are like New York City. We're population 700.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Okay, so little.
Same price, same.
So you
feeling.
Really know everybody.
I'm related.
Yeah, everybody.
There's a difference.
Cousins.
I don't just know everybody. Yeah. Somehow our 23andMe all match up somewhere.
Yeah, I did the thing, and it's kind of weird.
Well, what was the conversation like? Did you and Bill go? We're going to move out there together to Nashville. Was that?
Yeah. So we, Bill and I met in middle school, and there was one local music store. And we would go there every day after school. And he was the only kid that played guitar, too, and I played guitar. So we'd play every guitar in that place. And we just kind of formed a friendship and bond over music. And and when we were in high school, his cousin Graham, who's our bass player, you know, he'd come to town every summer and stay with us. And he played punk rock music. And, he, you know, he had his nipple pierced, and he was like the long-haired, rebellious guy. So he would come to town, and we would just listen to records and play music together when we were kids. And then we got the opportunity to come to Nashville to record with a guy that my dad had met. And we came here and stayed here for like a few weeks, I think, and recorded a few songs. I don't know really what we got done. And this wasn't a good situation that we got into, I don't think. But and then we went back home and came back to do some more. And then we just never left. So I was 18 at the time. Bill was 17. He was still in high school. But our principal was really cool, because we were in a small town, and they knew that you know, that's what we wanted to do from a way young age because we knew everybody. And so they just supported us, and our parents supported us. You know, they were there for us, and Bill got to do high school from here over the computer.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that an educator actually let education happen in a non-traditional way.
Yeah. Principal Floyd, Bill Floyd was his name.
That's really great. Well, look at you guys back again.
And you know what? Well, no, speaking of what you said, like prove those people right. When we finally had success, we went back to our hometown and went to the high school, and he'd be retired at the time, but he came back and we filmed a thing and like did a thing, and he walked around the school and we kind of told our story together. And you know, it's because of him that we were allowed to miss school days and still get a high school diploma. I mean, we had decent grades. I don't know if I had great grades, but you know, it's guys, people like that along the way that just do a little thing that helps you in a big way. And that was one of those moments too that we were proud to be a part of.
You had long hair, didn't you, for a while?
Oh yeah.
Is it in your hat or did you cut it?
No, it's cut.
Okay, so
it's cut. It's all trimmed up.
What's that conversation like? Who says, "Hey, cut your hair," or do you say it, or? And also, I always wonder what the barber's thinking. Like, I'm going to be the one that has to cut all this hair?
Well, I talked to the lady that cuts my hair, Debbie. We probably talked for 4 years about me cutting my hair before I actually committed to cutting my hair. And I think one day I came in there and I was like, you know, I think maybe I'll do it. And she's like, duh. And like, before you know it, she's like, you know, I'm just tired of hearing you talk about this.
So she just went at it before you had a chance to go back.
She just went at it. And I was like, thank you for just making that. Because I had long hair forever. Like, that was the rebel thing to do in our little small town. And, yeah, she just cut it, and I love it.
Are you related? Are you the Black Crows related? Are you related? Was one of them your cousin? Two of them your cousin? The brother?
Chris and Ridge Robinson.
And what is their relation to you?
So they're my dad's cousin, my second cousin. But my dad and their dad grew up, they were similar to the same age in Atlanta. And, you know, that was a... Yeah, so they growing up, like, they were a big influence on me because, like, my cousin, I mean, they were...
Did you know them?
Not till my dad let me meet them in 98 or 99 when I was, like, really... I mean, I was young. I was, like, 12. And they came to Columbia, South Carolina to play. And he's like, all right, I'll let you meet your cousins now. You're old enough to kind of understand. And, like, you obviously are taking this music thing very serious. And, that's who told me to write my own songs, was Rich. I was like, hey, man, what's your advice for a guy like me? You know, and he's like, well, write your own songs. He's like, don't learn other people's. You'll have time for that. But writing your own songs is what makes you unique. So I took that, obviously, to heart. And then ever since then, we've been close. And even to now, and, you know, it's kind of wild to have a, you know, that's your family. You know, I don't think of it in the... Sometimes I'm like, well, damn, I mean, those guys are badass. But, yeah, that was a big musical influence for me growing up. The biggest, really.
Because they were family or because of their style?
Their style and, like, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, man, these guys were rock stars. And that's what, you know, that's what I wanted to be. And they were cool. And, like,
I was a huge Black Crowes fan.
Yeah.
Still am. They're coming to play the show in a few weeks. Here in Nashville, which is pretty cool because I'm diehard, and they're like, we'll come play your show. So they're going to come with the brother because they're back together.
They're coming to the Bobby Bones show?
Yeah.
They're gonna awesome.
Play. Yeah.
Okay.
And so, because I'm Red Light Management, they're Red Light.
Yeah. With Mark.
Yeah. And so they know I'm a fan. And I was like, dude, I'm on like 150 cities. Like,
that's awesome. I know you're
and so they're going to come play the show. So I'm super pumped about it. But I've also.
Can I come with them?
Sure. Go whatever you want. Family affair.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to hear and know their story because as big a fan as I am of them, I also follow their story, and I've listened to, like, their interviews on Howard Stern, and they did not like – there was a big old right between those two brothers.
Yeah, they had some turmoil for sure.
Did you talk to both of them while they were split or either one of them, or did you have one you were closer to?
I did. I mean, I talked to Rich more, you know, and his wife and my wife are friends, and he's got kids, and now that we have a kid. But they were more in town than Chris was. But I'd see Chris when he came to town, and we'd go to the show, and, you know, he was always great. But, yeah, there was a time –
They didn't even talk. This is not you saying it. I've listened to many interviews. They didn't talk for like six years.
I mean, imagine not talking to your sibling for six. And I always would say, like, man, just it's your brother. Like, call. But for whatever reason, you know, and then I guess they finally did.
They're back. I love their back because they're playing the whole record from
track to back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which that to me is one of the albums that as I look back at what I really listened to as a kid. That was one of the records
yeah.
that was most influential to me growing up in Arkansas, being a grunge kid. It was kind of this weird hybrid.
Yeah, it wasn't 80s metal. Yeah. It wasn't like Soundgarden.
And it wasn't quite grunge, but there was a little bit of everything. And it wasn't quite country. But if you put, you know, She Talks to Angels out now, you definitely could put it on country radio.
Absolutely. They've said that before, too.
So it's this record was a big part of, because again, they were like Southern rock.
That's it.
Ish.
They don't like to be called that, I don't think.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Ish. Yeah.
What do you call it?
Just yeah.
Rock and roll band. But
it was interesting, though, because when they came out, that they were this sound and nobody else was.
Yeah.
And I tell a lot of new artists that are different. For example, like a Cassie Ashton. I don't know if you know Cassie at all. She's so different.
Taxidermy.
All of it. But she's so different. And at times it can be a struggle to be very different. But if you're different and you pop, you now have created the lane.
You got your own lane.
You're now, and everyone wants to get in your road. Everyone wants to get on the road that you've now created.
Yep.
I think you saw that with guys like a Sam Hunt who comes in and, you know, half the public was like, what is this garbage? But the other half was like, this is the greatest thing ever. But then success happens, and then everybody's using snap tracks. Everyone's using all of this. Everyone's like talking in their songs. Yeah, just a minute. Yeah. So
you did that well.
And everyone is going, well, I don't know if that's going to. But once it works, then Sam created his own lane.
Mm-hmm.
You see that with, I would even say you guys did it for a bit, where people were starting to hop in and be this kind of Southern rock thing.
Yeah.
And so
we're still here.
With the Black Crowes, that was what happened. They were the first of this sound.
Yeah.
Then other people tried to emulate them. And it's the emulation is never quite the same. But I was just a massive fan. I'm so pumped they're coming in.
Man, that's awesome.
I didn't even think about you guys being related till I was like, I knew you related. It's not even in my notes, but I knew you related to somebody. And then I was like, oh, they're coming on the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm pumped. I haven't announced that yet on the radio show, but that's a cool one for me.
That's going to be super cool.
My favorite artists to bring in are those from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Nobody is really famous and cool to me unless they were famous and cool when I was a kid.
Well, that's like the time to be famous.
Well, it's like, and also, I don't care.
What's like your favorite football team? It's like.
And I'm so jaded because I see what this fame crap is. There's nothing. It's nothing.
Yeah.
Who cares?
It's a and
like
illusion.
I've just had like a little tiny morsel of it. Like just. Yep. And it's like. Dude,
oh, you're killing it. You're Bear Grylls, man.
Yeah, but again, even at the tiniest it's like. Everybody's just putting their drawers on the same way.
As my dad always said, everybody wakes up and puts their pants on the same way that you do.
And the person you think has it most together, often it's the opposite.
That's a fact.
Often it's the opposite.
That is a fact.
Unless you were famous when I was a kid, then you were awesome.
Who's like your number one, like the guy, like the person, whoever you want to get on the show that you haven't done yet?
Well, I mean, I think I've got them. But for me, it was like obviously Garth.
Oh, yeah.
Was a big deal to me. Hootie was a huge part of my childhood. I was the biggest Hootie and the Blowfish fan.
Love
Darius and I are buds and like close.
Yeah, D's the best.
And so to get Darius and then do the Hootie stuff was cool. But even aside from the show, once, this is one of my cooler stories that most people don't find it fun at all, but I'm a massive sports fan and I was getting on a Southwest Airlines flight and I was the last one on the flight right before they shut the doors. And they were like, I got to get in. So I go in and they shut the doors. And there's one seat left, and it's a middle seat, obviously. And I'm walking back. I'm trying to find that seat. And in between, there was one middle seat, and there are two old men sitting on both sides of the middle seat. And one of the men was Eddie Sutton, who coached Arkansas, Oklahoma State.
Okay.
He was a massive college basketball coach. And the other one's Barry Switzer, who is Arkansas, played at Arkansas, won national championship at Oklahoma, Dallas Cowboys. And the seat was open in the middle of them, and they were famous to me as a kid, and I sat between
That's
them.
That's the universe
and
putting
I was
you
like,
in the right spot.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How did no one else sit here? And Barry Switzer was the nicest guy.
Isn't that great?
We would talk the whole time, and I was trying to be I was cognizant of not talking too much.
Yeah.
Because sometimes now I get on Southwest, and someone will go, oh, let me go sit by Bobby. And then they won't stop talking. They will not. And I love it. Don't get me wrong. I love it. But I'm on an airplane. I get
sometimes,
motion sick.
Yeah.
And I get tired. I'm tired. I'm just trying to – I sit by the window because I want to take a nap.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I put the headphones on. They're like, no. Yeah. I didn't want to be that. But we talked the whole time.
That's pretty cool.
So for
That's
me
destiny. –
That was cool. Like the childhood, you know, fame is still cool. Otherwise, who cares?
Yeah.
Like I just root for my friends that are good to do good things and move on with life.
There's always a few though.
Like that are garbage? Oh, you mean real?
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, listen, whenever you hear this is going to go up soon. So right now, Drinking Song is out. But if you're listening to this far away now, the record may already be out if you listen to this way later on. And the record, it's fine. Don't tell me the name of it.
All right.
Don't tell me the name of it. Because I need to remember this too. It is called Let the Band Play On.
That's
Why
it.
That? Because you guys are like back and freaking let us play.
Yeah, it's kind of the same. But at the end of this song, I ad-lib that, like randomly doing ad-libs at the end of the song. And I say, let the band play on, baby. And then I think Graham, our bass player, we're trying to figure out the name for their title. And he's like, man, you said this in this song. He's like, why don't we just call it Let the Band Play On? That's what we are. We've always forged ahead and we've always just played. And at the end of the day, we're just a band and we're four dudes that love to play music together. And that's what we do. So that was the whole sentiment to the whole album. And that's what we did. We just went in and played.
One final note, Zach and your band.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, he has an interesting name.
Yeah, he does.
Which is the same, Zach Brown.
Yeah.
Which is that weird?
He's got the H.
But I mean, people, do they ever confuse just by him?
Oh, yeah. So he's actually, he calls himself the real Zach Brown, but he was in Vegas one time at staying at a hotel doing a photo booth event and out there with his wife. And he was like, checking in, and the lady was like, oh, Zach Brown. And she goes, sir, you know that we have private, you know, entrances for people like you, you know, that you can come in and like, don't worry, we're going to take care of your room and we're going to, you know, room service, we'll take care of all that. Like, but thanks for staying at our hotel. And he's like, they're like, you're a musician, right? And he goes, well, yeah, I am a musician. And she's like, okay, great. And you know, he didn't lie. And then like, they just kind of like took care of a lot of stuff for him. And he was like, man, this whole Zach Brown thing's pretty sweet.
So he never had to pay. They just.
I think he did a little bit, but like they treated him like.
Well, any of it. If he gets any of it, because that's.
But bonus. He looks nothing.
Nothing
like Zach Brown.
My point with Zach is we were playing a softball game.
Oh, yeah.
He slid hard in the second and like tore his ace. What did he tear? Do you know?
He cracked his foot.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
He slid hard and then he limped off. And I was like, oh.
He was wearing a boot on stage for a while.
That stunk.
He was giving it all he had.
All at a charity game.
Yeah.
The only person I've seen go harder than Zach was Lauren Elena, who I saw actually face first dive into home plate on a play that didn't matter.
Yeah, I love
and Lauren. I will never forget it. And she went as hard because she, and you could tell she played ball as a kid. Yeah. She went face first hard into home. And it was like 11-1. And I was like, Lauren, there is no need for that.
You could have just but, walked in.
Yeah, you could have. So, well, listen, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Glad you're able to come over.
Man, thanks for having me. This is awesome. This. I was very excited about this.
Tell Carolina say hello.
I will. Absolutely.
And there we go. So there we go. Check it out. Drinking Song. That is episode 223. You can follow Michael on Instagram at Michael Hobby, or you can follow A Thousand Horses, both the solo and the band. All right. That's it. We'll see you next time, everybody.
This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.